A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem, Bismillahir Rahmanir Raheem. Respected viewers, Assalamu Alaikum and welcome to this week's show where we will be discussing mental health. Just as physical fitness helps our bodies to stay strong, mental fitness helps us to achieve and sustain a state of good mental health. When we are mentally healthy, we enjoy our life more, we enjoy the environment, we enjoy the people that we live with, the people that we work with, we can be creative, we can learn new things, we can take more risks. We are better able to cope with difficult job decisions, difficult personal decisions, because mentally our health is well. With one in two people affected with a mental disorder at some point in their life, we can establish that at least two of us on set today are going to have suffered with a mental disorder at some point. The personal stories of mental illness and suicide enrich the media, illustrating the fact that it has a real impact on life, but unfortunately, because of the stigma that is attached to mental health, we as a community do not address it. Many people say that being discriminated against in work and social situations is a bigger burden than the illness it is itself. So here with me today to discuss mental health are my two guests. My first guest is Sister Sara Al-Zubaydi. She grew up in Dubai. She completed a degree in psychology. She now studies psychodynamic counselling at Goldsmiths University. As a result of growing up in Dubai and now in London, she is interested in cultural differences of counselling approaches. Her main research interest is depression and anxiety disorders in the Middle Eastern community for those who live in the West. My second guest is Sister Mehnaz Bahaji. She resides in London with her children. She has studied sociology at Cambridge University. She is a researcher in Islamic affairs, and until recently she was a director of Adam's Translation. So, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's show. So if we can dive straight in, if I can come to you first, I guess an appropriate starting point would be to ask, what is good mental health?
Oh God, that's a really general question. Because there's such a big spectrum of mental health illnesses, and then each condition or each illness in itself has a spectrum of severity, I don't think you can answer that question in the time we have of what is good mental health. I think, to answer it quickly, is that it's it will allow the individual to have a functioning life.
Mm-hmm.
But to say what is good or what is bad mental health depends on each individual case and the severity of the illness that the individual is suffering.
Say severity of illness, but is there a norm that I can say, actually, I'm normal?
What is normal? What is normal with anything, not just mental
health? That is the question, then, isn't it? When we're looking at mental health, who then is able to say, yeah, you're okay today,
yeah,
but you're not?
Well, with mental health professionals, I haven't come across the word normal.
okay.
It's more like, are you able to function? Are you able to carry out your daily tasks, your work? So, for example, with depression, is it gone to such a severity that you find it hard to get out of bed in the morning, mm-hmm. or to, for example, enjoy things that you used to enjoy before? So for that person, if you used to enjoy exercising or a certain task and then all of a sudden you aren't, for them that is not normal.
Mm.
But for someone else, that could just be totally normal, not exercising, not arriving to work on time, things like that. So,
Sister Mehnaz, good mental health?
There's a lot one says to say, but it is individual case, actually. One could say genetically has got some effect.
Okay.
I haven't sort of, studied that as an expert, but working with a group in Harrow called Mind,
mm-hmm.
which they are really covering the mental health issues, and they sort of regularly provide a magazine called People Like Us.
Mm-hmm.
That experience shows me there are some genetic effect on a person's mind, but they found that many of the mental health issues would be taken care of thoroughly or just get rid of the person forever. It's just observing what they need, particularly on an immigrant, those who came over here, they just suddenly lose that motivation inside of them,
mm-hmm.
and they don't see any purpose to carry on. If you provide what they need, so that kind of mental issue within them goes sort of completely out of their life. Or in certain point, the depression will come back again, with the food, with the providing the environment that they are in need of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, they can solve the problem. But in terms of genetic issues, I cannot touch that subject.
Mm-hmm.
That really belongs to an expert doctor.
But what you're saying is that good mental health is when you are in the optimum condition to deal with your whatever your daily you know comings and goings. So then, does that then mean that you suffer mental health problems in whatever degree it may be when there is an issue?
I think if you ask a counsellor or a mental health professional, that they will say most people do suffer from some type of mental health issue. So for example, most of society, I don't, from the top of my head, I don't remember the percentage, but most of society will go through depression at some point. Most adolescents will go through self-esteem issues, so for example. So, sorry, can you repeat your question?
What is then mental health? So then if good mental health is everything going to an extent where you're able to deal with your daily life, does mental health issues, are they then defined as when you are at a point of breaking? So you put so much pressure on something that all of a sudden it starts to crack, and that's when you then suffer.
Yeah, and also mental health is a combination of your physical life. So for example, your diet, exercise, your sleeping pattern. So it's not just one specific thing. Okay. It affects your daily routine. It affects, you know, your health. So I think it is a point where an individual realizes that they've reached that point where they will now need to seek help from a mental health professional.
Okay. And any contributions?
I think again we go to the individual. I think, you know, certain things will bring the person to a mild mental health, but they actually are not aware of losing a job or parents, or they made the wrong decision in marriage, in working somewhere that they know this is not their place. And because they need the money, because the parents says, because society expects them to do this and this and that.
Yeah.
So the person, when it comes to the decision, you know, right, I'm not going to carry on with that, suddenly that mental issue goes away from the person. But if they are staying in and they go deeper, it's just like falling into dark, down, very deep hole. You don't know how to climb up. And then that mental issue will become very severe. One has to, you know, the family should really, and the community should realize what's this person going through. If they're through the behavior, you would understand. The other point is very important is that when the tribulation hit our life, we tend not to talk to anyone because there is no trust. The network, the trust, one person, to sort of, you know, you just want to get it out of your system. Just share it with somebody. Because you can't find somebody, you bottle it up, pile it up over here. And that could be another type of mental illness. That sort of is a general thing that happens in one society. If we can create somebody who can trust or you can get help, most you could, you know, in mind that I sort of, you know, sometimes get involved with them, they find that around over 75 or 70, they can solve the issue of a family if they had this kind of network or help.
So you raise a good point, and you mentioned community. And I've noticed over the number of shows that we've done, our communities are very good at dealing with like small things. So for example, bereavement sometimes can lead to an issue, and it can be very unsettling. So your community will help you wash and shroud the body, will help you help arrange the fair burial, but then are not there to help you deal with what then happens afterwards.
The side effect of it.
So okay, I've helped you bury it, yalla, my job is done and I've gone home. Why is it as a community that we find it so difficult to talk about it? What is the stigma to mental health? Like, if one in two people suffer from it, then our communities are really large in the West now. I mean, I know that from the community that I come from, it's over 1,000 plus members. That's like 500 people who are just members. That's not saying that those are the only people that come that are going to suffer with the problem. Why is it that we're not addressing the issues?
I think it's because from what I understand, it's fear, because they don't have the education, they don't understand. They think that now that I've been, say for example, diagnosed with depression, if anyone else finds out, a depressed person is not depressed for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
But the society tends to see it that way, that once they're depressed, they're kind of broken. Or once they've had this label of any mental illness attached to them, is that maybe they can't be a functioning member of the society, or they have some lack in some way. So it's kind of a shame to admit that, okay, you know what, I have something wrong with you. Whereas with physical illness, so say, for example, if someone's diagnosed with cancer or someone has, God forbid, any other type of illness, it's kind of, the support is there. You will find people, you know, like praying for you and things like that. But then, again, the mental health side of it is, what is this impacting on the person, on their family? There's no one there to support in that sense. And although there are non-Muslim organisations, I think from talking to a number of people, they're very sceptical of them. They don't feel that they will be able to help. So a friend of mine who had a bereavement in her family, she was having counselling, but she decided to end the counselling because the counsellor asked her, do you feel suicidal? And she took that as in, he didn't understand her. He didn't understand that she couldn't possibly feel suicidal because she's Muslim. So I think it's issues like that of not understanding each other's standpoints or viewpoints. So maybe having more Muslim counsellors is the answer.
Maybe you are studying for
Inshallah.
Sister Hanaz.
I think in terms of, you know, depression and all the rest, is the educational side is very important, which our community don't have.
Yeah.
The other things they worry, though, if I just say my daughter or my son or my husband or my wife have got a depression, oh, there is a sort of slight mild mad person in that house. So my kids can't get married, I will lose friends. So this is the fear comes in. But if the community had the education, the depression, it could be like a stomach ache, like a sort of cancer, like a sort of hair fall. It just has to be treated. Having said that, the Muslim world, the top priority they took that in the time of when Iraq was in Diwan Madayin, they had a center for treating the mental health. They were the first one found the cure, the medicine, and how to deal with it. And now we lost it. We literally lost it. Now the Europe brought that back. We're trying to learn from them, which their ethics and moral got involved. They just said, oh, go and get a boyfriend, and if that's what you feel. Go and get a girlfriend. No, that's not the answer. So we don't want to go to them. I think the community should be educated in a very deep level.
Yeah.
And then become, we will solve most of the problem if we could do that.
Yeah.
Sarah, what spectrum of illnesses, you know, exist? I mean, I know that, for example, I laugh about the fact that, you know, sometimes I'm very OCD about things.
Yeah.
You know, when I cook, I have to wash my hands 100 times because I just can't deal with it. And I find it humorous because it is like a small, I need to keep washing my hands. But it wasn't until recently that I realised that, you know, like you were saying, that there are varying degrees of things, and actually OCD at its extreme can actually be quite detrimental.
Can be debilitating. Firstly, I think speaking as a Muslim from our community, we see that as Muslims we're not part of the wider British community, so whatever mental health illnesses they have, whatever issues is going on, we're kind of immune to it. And that's not true. I think we're starting to realise now that we do have the full spectrum of mental health illnesses, and we are starting slowly to deal with them. But I think the way to deal with them now is to use the tools that we have. So, for example, because of what I'm studying, I do share a lot of things on my Facebook that I know a lot of people follow. And so although I think that maybe for me it's not beneficial, or it won't benefit me directly, that if, like recently I shared how to spot signs of depression.
Yeah.
So because I know that there are certain people that are going to read that, and it might be beneficial to them. So this is a tool that I'm using myself. If everybody kind of try to think similarly and maybe brought it up more in social gatherings, then I think we'll go on our way to try and deal with it and, you know, make mental health in our community more of a talking point and not be ashamed of it as well.
So what are, I mean, if any such thing exists, is there a, you know, okay, so for example, you know, when you eat at my house, you know my food's going to stink because I wash my hands a lot. So does it start at OCD and go as far as schizophrenia? Is that kind of the spectrum, or is it bigger? Or
no,
is it
the spectrum, as far as I understand it, is there are a number of illnesses, a number of disorders where you can have, for example, eating disorders, you can have behaviour disorders, you can have sleeping disorders, you know, the numerous, I can't name them all. And each one of those illnesses has a severity. So, for example, with depression, you can be mildly depressed, or you can be extremely depressed, where it's debilitating, it's affecting your life, it's affecting your family's life, mm-hmm. you know, where you won't be able, maybe you will need to go, obviously, talk to a mental health practitioner and also get medication, you know. So in that way, there's different spectrums, and they're all, you can see them all in our society, they're all present.
Do you have any comments on
No, but then what's the behaviour? How far, what you read in a behaviour? They shout, they rude, or they just very quiet, or each one of them has got different field.
With regards to depression?
Yeah.
Well, it can again, it's different for each person. So, for example, if one individual is very bubbly, very outgoing, and then all of a sudden they become, with the onset of depression, they become very secluded, they don't socialise.
Okay.
Or it could be the other way. It could be they were very, you know, very preferring their own company, and then all of a sudden they're really loud, shouting, maybe aggressive. So it's, you have to spot your own changes, you know. If there's, say for example, if there's a bereavement in your family, you expect to be at onset of depression or onset of some sort of you know, a reaction. But if it's without a cause, without a physical cause, then I would say maybe talk to a mental health professional.
So not necessarily they should have medicine, because I disagree with all these medicine.
It depends. If you talk to a psychiatrist, they might have a different view. But my personal view
is... And it's just so funny, because the psychiatrist up the road needs a psychiatrist down the road. But you just don't know. And sometimes you go, I do know a person who had OCD and other problems. Sort of. I mean, I realized there's no changes. Keep going. And I just said, what's happening? When I just wanted to meet the psychiatrist, and he just did not listen to her.
Mm-hmm.
So they themselves, sometimes I found that, you know, the people who, I'm not, don't get me wrong, because my daughter is a psychologist.
Okay. Right?
sometimes the people who go and study, they're trying to sort it out their own problem.
That is
you have to realize, you know, recognize who you're going to.
Yeah.
It is a very hard job to do, but I think we as a Muslim, again, we've got the knowledge, particularly the Quranic knowledge. But I know many people who do not agree with a prayer or recitation.
Mm.
They just think it's the old-fashioned, what is she talking about? But then, thank God, the scientists reaching the same point. We come to it.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I wanted
that
to
is
say.
Actually interesting. That theory is called the wounded healer. You have your own issues, and to kind of discover them or overcome them, you, so for example, go into the psychology field, or you go into any other mental health field. And but we do get training for that. So for example, as a counsellor, I can't become a qualified counsellor until I've had personal counselling for a number of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that we do work through that. So hopefully by the time I counsel, I'll be sane.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's like, sort of, you know, we talked about nafs. Nafs has got lots of negative issue.
Yeah.
We have to overcome it.
Yeah.
And but the education is not inside the community. That, look, everybody's nafs is different because they've been brought up in a different family, environment, or culture.
Yes.
So they have that called, in some ways, called mental issue.
Mm.
So we've overcome it. You have to work on it. And it's nothing wrong, sort of, you know, if each one of us hits into that problem, to dilemma once, you know, in our lifetime, or maybe many times. But if you know it, then you know how to tackle it down.
Mm. Just concentrating on depression, because that's what your area of research is at the moment. How common is it, and can it be alleviated without medication?
There has been previous research into exercise helping with alleviating depression. There has been also research into diet, things like, especially with children,
mm-hmm.
And adolescents, diet seems to be, it really helps them with the depression, with adolescent depression. So yeah, it does help, but with extreme cases, with on the other end of the spectrum, a lot of the time medication is used. But with early onset of depression, a lot of the time exercise and diet and lifestyle change, things like regulating sleeping pattern, it does help with the signs of depression.
Brilliant. We're just going to go for a quick break, and we will be back shortly. To my respected viewers, I do hope you have enjoyed the first half of today's show, where we have been looking at mental health issues. We've been looking at what we were just looking at, depression, and, you know, on the early onset of depression, that, you know, your diet, sleeping patterns, you know, lifestyle changes, they can help to gear you back to positive mental health without the need of medications. I do hope you have enjoyed the first half. Do join me for the second half. Welcome to back to today's show, where we are talking about mental health and mental health issues. We've defined what is, or we try to define what is good mental health, and there's no such thing as normal. And, you know, we did have the statistic that 1 in 2 people will suffer with a mental health problem at some point in their life. So we will jump back into today's show, and I will ask, go straight to Sarah, what signs are there that someone is suffering from something?
If you look at society in general. Mm-hmm. If you take, say, for example, a young girl, a teenage girl, and her mother, for example, they're going to have totally different signs. They're going to, say, for example, the daughter might become more withdrawn. She might, say, realistically listen to music that she wasn't listening to before, maybe more aggressive music. She'll be changing her friend circle. So her parents will see, or her caregivers will see, that there has been a change in her behaviour and her attitude and her interests. Mm. Whereas the mother, she's going to have a totally different set of behaviour changes. So the mother might become more short of temper. Mm-hmm. She might have problems with her sleep. She might have problems with her husband. So you can't say what is, you know, what is the signs of mental that a mental health situation is happening. But with each person, it will be different. With each age group, it's different as well, and varying from men to women. Also, I think it's important to point out, it's different from culture to culture.
Okay.
Yeah. Cross-culturally, mental health issues differ.
And is there anything that we can say is predominant in either of our communities? So,
Well, me studying studying depression in Middle Eastern men in London, you see that aggression is an issue that has been brought up in my research that I've just started, so I can't give too much information.
It's not conclusive,
But that seems to be different to Western, I mean, demographics from research of Westernized men. Mm-hmm. So that is a definite difference that I've seen.
And have you noticed any?
Yes, you do. The depression could be a sign of many things. I mean, through the experience, I haven't studied. My daughter was studying, and I was looking in her book. It could be a point of the immigrant, could be one of them, because they changed their style of life. They came to a new culture, land, language. They don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the motivity within them just dies off. And then they go down. If they don't treat it there and then, it's going to be a major problem for the family. But then again, having said that, a person who has got a very strong faith in his Lord or her Lord, he will always help them. Mm-hmm. If you can get the full picture, if you can understand what I'm trying to say, the minute you go to that sort of, you know, mood, or you would sort of, you know, disappointed of many things, because many of the depression comes because you are disappointed of whatever it is. You're studying, the mark that you got, or the marriage, or the business you have, or genetically, yes, this is another side which I can touch on, that only an expert can find that, you know, why the depression occurred or arise to the sort of to this person. But then again, the education of the community and the people who surrounded with the person could literally help the person come out of what they're going through. You're smiling. What's happening?
No, I'm just smiling about the fact that you're saying that education is an important factor to try and.
I thought you might just remember a case that there was a lady who her son had a depression, and then it was just going on and on for 5 years. What she did, she exposed his behavior to certain people, and certain circle that she used to go, 4 or 5 different circles, to certain circle that he used to go, and he didn't go anymore. He exposed those things, and straight away he came out of it, and she never could think or knew she's done the job. He just come completely out of it, that he was going to psychiatrists, she was paying, and the parents were worrying. And then when they told him, you know, what happened, he just says, oh, I don't want people to think of me. I'm very stuff, not worthy anything to the society.
Yeah.
And then because he went out of his bedroom, everything went out of the window. He just, sometimes it's like that. But most of the time, I suppose, is another remedy that, I mean, I'm going to take all your time if I want to say it. But I think I just wanted to mention few psychologists. There is one called Ofer Grossbart, who is an Israeli psychologist. He was teaching his student what is the best remedy for the for mental health in general, in overall. And then is after, you know, many courses they were doing, the last year, one of the lady from Haifa, which is, I think it's in Palestine, or is it in Lebanon? I can't remember which the area.
I think it's in Lebanon.
Or is it in, I think it's in that border. Anyway, from Haifa. She just came directly to him, just says, you know what? I'll tell you the remedy. Very simple. Read Quran. He said, what? Read Quran. He says, yes, read Quran. And then he just says, okay, then I'll take your advice on board. The next week, he gave the Quran, says, you know, how many chapters in Quran? They said, it's that chapter. So he gave two chapters to each student to make a research. They came with 330 verses. Whenever any problem rise to the person, they will read it. And then he ended up, in 2009, produced a book which been printed in one of the university called The Quran for Education of for Children. So you can teach your children, when anything goes wrong or happen to you, get the Quran, read it, or ask us to read it for you. Go to the community, pray for you. But then again, there is another doctor called Dr. Zaid Kazem Muhammad Ghazabi, I think. He's really, really expert on the whispering that the shaitan does to you, and it's for whole mankind. And Quran's got the remedy, which in Iraq, when they find that, you know, the best institute, the first one established for mental health, they were using that. So it's worthwhile just looking at it. I know many psychologists say, you're talking about this is really funny, you need the medicine, this and that. I do know it. But then again, I will refer it again to Natalie Torbett's book, who is a psychiatrist, has got three different PhD on this. She wrote a book and went around the world traveling that the prayer for any book, even the Hindus, it will really help. And she has got a great experience on that. That's all I can say. No, this is my experience.
I value the input, because I strongly believe that there's no illness that has been sent that Allah has not sent the cure
for. Absolutely. Prophet Muhammad said it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I just have to say.
Yeah, of course. Go.
He comes a professional. We're not going to crush you.
For me, it's a bit dangerous this, at this point. It's a delicate point. But I do understand that a lot of people do get their healing from spirituality, from the Bible, from the Quran, from any of their religious scriptures. And that is important. We can't say that, you know, it's not a valuable source. But for me, there's a fine line, because then you might... People may feel that if, for example, they do have a mental health issue, if they do have depression, that then their own spirituality is lacking, or that they don't have a good enough connection with their Lord.
Sorry, I'm just going to come into that. Okay. I didn't mean to sort of, you know, the educational, as I said.
Yeah.
Educational is a part that to teach the person it is no lack in the spirituality of the person, or iman, or whatever you say. But let me just bring when is another hadith that Musa alayhi salam always recommended, dua, dawa. It is a medicine and a prayer. So both of them comes always together. They have to see a psychiatrist, an expert, use the medicine, and use that one to sort of, you know, combine it, and it will help.
I agree. Of course, I do agree. I can't be a Muslim and not agree.
I'm not trying to. But you know, many people, they're just looking. Even the Muslim. I'm not talking about non-Muslim. The Natalie Torbett, the Jewish background. She has no faith.
Yeah.
But she come to the faith because she realized through the 20 years of research, prayer has got a great effect.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason, you know, I'm just saying.
No, there has been research. There has been research, definitely, to show that prayer the reading of spiritual books or being part of a spiritual community
mm.
does have an effect on having a healthy mental health state. So no one can disprove that. No one can say that it's not true, or that, you know, you have to just see a psychologist or a counsellor or any other mental health professional.
Mm.
But my frustration comes from watching YouTube videos of, you know, because of my research now, I'm trying to find more material or more people that have spoken about this. And they just seem to have the view that if you do suffer from a mental health condition, it's because something you haven't prayed enough, or you haven't.
Yeah,
I know that's an extreme view.
Diet you were talking about
yeah.
is so important. Bring grapes.
You are what you eat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Prophet Muhammad says, whenever you want to be happy, just, you know, the happiness
yeah.
is just get rid of all the mental illness. Just put grapes in your diet. Now, trust me, it happened. You know, as a single parent, you know, bring up 7 kids all alone. I had no community, no
wow.
house, nobody. That was my prayer. And each time I just thought, God, I can't do it. You give to Hajar alayhi salam 1, to Mary 1, you gave me 7. So then I just said, yeah, don't get on to prayer. And I brought grapes in. You won't believe it, the effect. It's
mm.
incredible. And it's the same I recommend to anybody. Each time
just
I get
grapes.
It works.
Yeah.
Sarah, you need to prescribe people to eat grapes. Is there
yes.
serotonin in grapes?
I don't know. I don't know about grapes. But I do know just generally fruit. That it does help with depression. I know pomegranates does help. And I remember when it was mentioned in university that pomegranates helps, and I can't remember what else it was. I think figs.
Yeah.
And everybody else was like, wow, this is so amazing. And I was like, yeah, that's in the Quran.
Like, I know this.
Yeah. And also another thing, talking about this, is studying theories like from Freud and I'm sure you've heard of the Freudian slip,
yes.
is that you say something that you don't intend to say. And then I came across that hadith of Imam Ali that a human speaks, I don't know the exact translation in English, but you say what you mean instead of what you intend to say, so like the word slips from under your tongue. And then I was just like, but they call that the Freudian slip.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, but Imam Ali spoke about it so much.
Always reach the same thing,
yeah.
whether they are, you know, religious or not, they reach the same point. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Because Allah is in charge of his system.
Yeah.
He is the owner of the whole universe and earth. He's in charge of everything. And the lips, he's created it. He's in charge, and he put it in your mouth and you say it.
Yeah.
So whether you follow it from the hadith of Imam Ali or whether you take
it's
from Freud, it's
the same reality.
Exactly the same.
So whilst we're talking about the Quran, we're talking about Islam, and we're talking about religion and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
For I know a few people in our community who, when they've aged, and I don't know whether this illness is to do with age, but Alzheimer's and
yeah.
dementia.
Yeah.
Is it Allah's way? And none of us can speak for God, obviously, but from what I've seen, you know, Allah says in the Quran, I created you in a vulnerable state, then I gave you strength, then I reversed you back.
Mm-hmm.
Is dementia that onsetting of that reversal?
And
is it, does it, I mean, in order for me to try and justify this claim, do we then need to understand, and is it true in my assumption that it only affects older people?
Is the question directed at me?
Yes, sorry.
It is to do with the onset of it is with older age.
Okay.
But there have been cases of younger adults having early onset as well. I can't answer about the tafsir of the Quran. I have no knowledge of the tafsir. But what I can say is that... can you just repeat the verse again, or
it is
the question?
It obviously I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah.
You basically it's a cycle. So you're dependent, and then you have strength, and then you go back to dependent.
Yeah.
In ayatihi, this is a sign from Allah, obviously,
yeah.
is in Surah Al-Taha, I believe,
yeah.
that from the child, you know, you
yeah.
just return back to where you were a child
yeah.
when you're old.
Like you just go around a
yeah,
whole cycle.
But Allahu A'lam, but that happens with people that don't even suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's, you know, they seem to regress.
That's true, they regress in a physical state. I'm talking...
Even mentally they regress, they start to lose their memory, they start to maybe not be able to speak in the way they were before.
Mm.
The whole body regresses back to, you know, as if it was a child again.
So what mental illnesses are prevalent in older communities? I mean, I'm not saying that death only comes when you're
yeah.
older, because obviously death can come at any point.
Again, the whole you have so for example with the elderly, if they come to the age of, say for example, retirement, there is quite a high chance that they will get depression, especially if they had depression earlier on in their life, because now they've lost the job, usually the job role, is the identity, what they have, especially if it's so for example a doctor or someone who's well respected, and now all of a sudden they don't have this position, they don't have the colleagues that they had before, they don't know what to do with their time, so they become depressed. And the second thing, especially later on in quite elderly people, that their friends, their family members start to pass away, so that is kind of hard for them to deal with. So we see depression again a problem. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, I think, you know, that could do, but then again, we always go back to the education. The community have to take care of such a people, which is a very rewarding thing to do. We used to have that in our culture. Over here, you know, people tend not to have it very much. Then again, if you always have your company, Allah, that's a great help. No matter what happened, you're steady, strong.
I love the story of Ayub. Lost his house, lost his business, lost his family, lost everything, got illnesses, and it was just Sabar Ayub all the way through.
He says, "Inni masani azuru wa anta arhamur rahimin." So you have got it all there, inshallah. Allah will help us to get through.
And I think another important point is the majority, I would say the majority of people, if they want to help someone who, say, for example, has an older person, say, an older neighbour or older family friend, you don't necessarily know what to do or how to help. The intention might be there, but you don't know, like, you don't want to be too overly intrusive.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be, you know, as come across as if you don't care. So we don't know the balance.
Yeah, that is also true. Sidney Mahnaz, do you think that having a recreational habit helps keep the mind healthy?
It does. When you're occupied, you don't notice the time pass. You don't notice what the people do to you. If you sort of, you know, they are towards you, negative or positive, either way, it has no effect on you. I think occupying yourself, it's very, very important. And I, you know, with the mind that I was working with them, you know, they come to that research and conclusion. The people who are busy tend not to have much of this depression that the others do, that they just says, you know, what's wrong all of a sudden? Oh, my friends died, you know, I don't have family, or my children don't visit me. They just really go, because they don't have the habit of different style of life. Suddenly this style changing to something that they were unexpected, or they didn't decide to have. I think if you have something, you know, it's very important. Allah talks to us all the time in Quran, find your purpose. When you find your purpose, you're busy with that and you carry on. And then up to the desk, you can see this person with such a passion and love, keep doing the same thing over and over again. Because they found their purpose and Allah put the love on them. Because we are all instruments from Allah on the earth anyway. I think it's very important to know who you are and what you want to do. Medically, is it accepted?
Is Sarah going to contest this on this point?
No, I'm a contestant.
It's very important, because this is another knowledge that Allah put it over there. You love to do it, and give us a hand, because my expertise is something else.
I think having recreational activities, obviously, so much research shows that whatever age group you're in helps. So, for example, with the elderly, they're encouraged to do things that will keep their mind active, that will help with their motor skills. So, for example, crosswords or knitting or anything that will keep them Sudoku. I haven't got there yet, but it's like it keeps them active, it keeps them sharp, and it has been shown that it reduces the onset, like it kind of slows the onset down of things like dementia or any other illnesses that, you know, that a person may be suffering.
I don't recommend anyone take up cross stitch. I used to do it until it got really annoying. No. I just can't do this anymore.
Well, that might cause you stress that she could come and talk to me for.
All right, so the other side of mental health is the impact that it has on carers. And it can be a trying time on them. I mean, you know, you see people in your community who, for some reason or another, we seem to think that because there is a stigma, because we want to be able to care for our own, sometimes I think we're doing more harm than we are doing good. Because we want to look after them ourselves. We don't want outsiders coming in looking after. I remember talking to a lady who happened to be the primary carer of her mother-in-law. I said, why do you do it? You know, the state will give you nurses, they'll come, they'll help. She says, no, but I don't want, you know, any kind of, and she'd already told her mother-in-law that these people aren't pure, they're not clean, they're not this. All the while, by you telling her this, she then is saying, okay, no, I don't want it. But it's increasing in your stress levels. Yeah. You have no time for yourself. Mm. Then all of a sudden, they have a mental health problem. You have a mental health problem. It's just like, definitely, what a vicious circle. Like, I'm
and
not
they
sure.
They come to the mosque and they take it out on you. And you just think, say, hey, ho.
What happened? What did I do? I don't know what I did.
Yeah. I think definitely, if you're a primary carer, especially support groups, they give you respite days where you're able to go away, do your own thing, or they take the dependent person away. So then, even if you don't want to just stay at home, you don't have the responsibility there where you have to be constantly caring for someone.
Yeah.
If you're not in the ability to, if you're not fully well yourself, you can't possibly give someone the full care that they need. And I think another point is that we're ashamed maybe to ask for help, or we think that it's our responsibility, fully our responsibility, so we can't...
Feel of guilt.
Yeah, that's it, guilt, sorry, not shame. I used the wrong word. But we definitely do feel guilty if we ask, especially someone from the wider community, could you come in and help me take care of it? And it's like, how come this woman who doesn't know my mum or doesn't know my mother-in-law, for example, with the example you gave, how could she care for my this lady?
And when you do,
yeah,
completely, not from that race, not from that family, you go and give a hand, they think, oh, what does she want?
Yeah, that's suspicion. There's so much suspicion.
Then again, it stops you, you know, it just, it doesn't work. Again, we go back again to education. Educate the community to bring the love of the Creator into their heart. Then everybody thinks, like Sirat al-Mustaqim, one way.
Yeah.
Oh yes, she's doing it for Sabilillah, subhanallah, bless your sister. No problem, no suspiciousness, nothing. Yeah. But until we get there, it's just is a long journey.
Definitely.
And but it does give a hand a lot to the person. I know my neighbour, who's from Hoja community, her mother-in-law is very, very violent. I mean, she's got Alzheimer's, she's very violent. Sometimes she just come into the mosque and she just throw it out, and you don't know. If you don't know her, you just think, what's wrong with her?
It's just
she piled up. But she does accept help from outside. It's still difficult.
Yeah, I think that's another point to consider, is that to be an effective carer, effective primary carer, you need to know your limits. You need to know, okay, this is all I can do. And it might not be much. It might not be, you know, caring for someone 24/7. But that's all you can do. And if you carry on pushing yourself, you're just going to cause harm to the person you're caring for and for yourself. So to know when to ask for help, to know where to go to ask for help, that's really important as well. And I think that's needed in our communities.
Well, it's been an interesting discussion today. I'd like to thank you both for your contributions. To my respected viewers, I do hope that you have enjoyed today's show. We have learned that I think the key to trying to solve certain issues is maybe to educate ourselves, to identify with mental illnesses, to understand that it is a norm, that we will suffer with something at some point, that there are things that we can do to help alleviate them, healthy lifestyles, you know, good eating habits, good sleeping patterns, and to, you know, hold on tight to the rope of Allah, the Quran. So I do hope that you have enjoyed today's show. Do join us next week. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.